Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. This week we're going to be speaking about chasinus and the burden their costs put on families. We're going to have on a financial planner who says 85% of his clients struggle to make a wedding. Can you really make a wedding for $10,000? We're going to be speaking to Chaim Eckstein from Monroe, the founder of the $10,000 Wedding Challenge. He's a professional money manager. We'll speak about how his clients struggle with it. Reb Yosef Vigler, Rav of Magen Yisrael. We're going to have Shlomi Dax, the famous singer, orchestra owner. He's going to be speaking about what happens if the Rabbanan made a takana. You could only have a one-person band, the drum player. What's his opinion of it? He's obviously slightly prejudiced, but his points are well taken. We're going to have Shaul Greenwald, who is a business person in Naskin. He founded the Simcha Initiative, backed by Rabbi Eli Brudny, by Rabbi Reisman, etc. Should make for a very interesting program. Rabbi Isai, what are your thoughts? 732-806-8700, press number 2. That's for what the Bnei HaYeshiva have to say. Or info@headlinesbook.com. We will post both messages, voicemails, as well as written, unless you request otherwise. But we're interested in what the Olam has to say. I want to make an ad for our sponsor. I want to read two letters I got from listeners. Here's Ellie Cohn. He says, my son is a reader, and he spent all his time reading The Hunger Games, the Shadow Bone Trilogy, and the Darkest Minds series. By his bar mitzvah, somebody went ahead and bought him the volumes of Headlines. Since then, by the Shabbos table, he's been speaking about killing a terrorist, guns and shuls, views on alcohol consumptions by Kiddush. You've changed his life. I would like to thank you very much. And signed, Ellie Cohn. Here's another letter I got from Izer Moskovsky. My family lives in the United Kingdom. I feel immense hakaras hatoiv to you for your books. They're the most borrowed book of our English Torah library. They have opened up the depth, clarity, and relevance of the Torah to our students. I use them constantly as the sefer to learn b'chavrusa with my students during our weekly learning sessions. They have been instrumental in giving so many their first taste of authentic, deep Torah and Svara Yashara. We would love to have your latest book, Headlines 3, available too for our students. I am confident it will be the most loved and learned sefer on our shelves. Whatever. These are, if you want to really learn about interesting topics, keep your children discussing, debating by the table things other than politics, etc., go out and get Headlines 3. There are still some available in Svarim stores. I would like to speak about a topic. I don't know if it interests you, but it's a question I frequently get from people, especially, you know, modern Orthodox, inquiring people, friar people, etc. A balmum is pasal avoda in this week's parsha. Does the Torah really discriminate against the handicapped? I mean, are good-looking people necessary to do the avoda? Is spirituality about looks? I mean, would Brad Pitt, Cary Grant make the perfect kohanim? I actually heard a story in Eretz Yisrael about a girl who suffered from dwarfism. She was 3.5 feet tall, but she graduated top of her class in seminary, and she went to look for a job. In high schools, or elementary schools, I don't remember, she was turned down by 29 schools. They looked at her dwarfism as a handicap. The 30th school took her. I ask you, what are the children of that school, what are they going to learn about tolerance, about Avos Yisrael, about loving somebody who struggles, who life is difficult for? So it's interesting. The Marshal, he lived in 1510 in the mid-1500s. He was a contemporary of the Rabbi Yosef Cairo and the Ramah. He's called by historians of that era, Melech al-Kolchach be-Hamoirim, and he was called, even though he lived in the same generation, he was called the Melech of Rabbi Yosef Cairo and Ramah, Ga'an ha-ga'inim. That's how the Tzemach David refers to him. And he was discusses somebody whose arms were cut off. Is he Roy Elias Shliach Tzibur? And what does he answer? He says, the great Maram Baruch, the Marami Rutenberg, he says, discusses this in a tshuva. By the way, the Maramba Rabbarach was the Rebbe of the Rush, and he was also the Rebbe of the Hagoyas Maimoni, and he knew a little bit about suffering. He lived during a terrible period in Germany. In fact, the last 7 years of his life, he lived in prison. He died in prison. And what does the great Maramba Rabbarach say? You asked me about a person who was shepaga by midas hadin, and also one of his limbs was cut off. Is he roi shliach tzibur? And his answer is pshita de roi. Not only he's roi viroyu, he's extra roi for adaraba mitzvah menamufchar. Why? For the abal mum to dam for amen. The melech malchi amlochem akadosh baruch hu chafetz lehistamish bekelim shvurim. The Holy Lord likes to be mishtamish with broken kelim. Loi kiderech melech hedyet basavadam. Kidiksev. It's a pasuk. Lev nishbar v'nitcha. Hashem loy sivza. It also says, ezdake ushval ruach. So he says, the only place where there's a psul is by the mum in the Beis HaMikdash. Which he doesn't explain why that is. Let me suggest an answer. Because I'm asked this all the time. Is this really the Torah discriminates against the handicapped? Like, where's our soul? What does the Rambam write in Perek Beis of Hilchos Shabbos about the Mishpatei HaTorah? He says, all the Mishpatei HaTorah are rachamim, the chesed, the shalom ba'olam. One of the simonim of Klal Yisrael is rachmanim. How could, when the Umay Sa'olam recognize the covered we need for a handicapped, how could the Torah possibly be less? And here's, I put on my Big Day Melcham. I wanted to find an answer for this, and I found an answer. But let me ask you a question. Every place you drive, there's a handicap sign. Oh, handicapped, handicapped, handicapped bathrooms, handicapped parking. Okay, we respect it. But on the other hand, have you ever seen a president who was handicapped? In fact, the only president that was handicapped in the last 100 years was FDR. And the press never shot a picture of him that showed below his waist that he was in a wheelchair. Why? Because it pasnished for the president of the United States to be handicapped. Looks are very important. In fact, since the television, there hasn't been a president who's been less than 6 feet tall. Practically no senators are handicapped, except for those who were injured in wartime. Not one of the royals, Prince Charles and all his, you know, v'chulu v'chulu, none of them are handicapped. No one in Hollywood is handicapped. So, on one hand, we respect, you know, the rights of the handicapped, but in positions of prominence, we don't. And why is that? Because people are superficial. And you know what? Royalty, if it's handicapped, there's something wrong with that. President, never handicapped. Notwithstanding our rachmanis, but people are superficial. And I have another question for you. The Mishkan was gold, everything glittering gold. I mean, why did an eagle, the Rabbeinu Shlomo, who says, Li ha-kesev, li ha-zov, no Hashem, he needs gold? I mean, who decorates, it's like some fancy lady from Borough Park built the Mishkan with all the gold? Does that make any sense? And what's the answer? People are superficial. And you say, oh my goodness, what are you saying? Here's the Rambam in the Sefer Moira. What does he write? He talks about the inyan of Mumin, and why the Malbushim Yafim in the Beis HaMikdash, etc. And what does he write? The reason is, Mipnei Shehamoin Lo Yigdal Adam Etzlam B'tzurasei Amitis Elo B'shleimas Eivor V'yoyfi B'gadav. It's not because the Rabbeinu Shlolem is prejudiced. It's because we are so small. The Chinuch says the same thing. In Emor, this week's Parsha, Mitzvah Reishayin Hei, he says, man is drawn after the looks, and how important their heroes look. And it's interesting, in Shulchan Aruch, in Aruch Chaim, we'll put the Maram HaKaimus online, it says that when you have a cloth that you wrap around a Sefer Torah, and one side is cloth and the other side is silk, silk is much more beautiful. He says, we are not noig to put the silk inside facing towards the sefer where it should be, l'chvayd sefer Torah, but outward facing. And what does the Bi'ur HaGra say on the spot? He says, the back of the doors of the ulam that the people didn't see, the front were beautiful and the back were wood. Rabbeinu Shalom doesn't need gold, doesn't need fancy copper, he doesn't need fancy drawings, but man needs it. because we are so small.
And you know what? The Rabbeinu Shalom, he's not an action. He says, look, if this is how you will understand, then this is what I'm going to do. I'll bring you many rayas to this. How the Rabbeinu Shalom accommodates. Tiny man. The Rambam writes, the famous Rambam in the Moira, he says, why are we makriv karbonis? And the Rambam writes, I'll translate it into English. Rambam says, it's impossible to go suddenly from one extreme to the other. The nature of man, it's hard for him to suddenly discontinue everything to which he's been accustomed. But the custom in those days consisted of sacrificing animals in their temples. So the Rambam, it's a long Rambam, but he basically says, so therefore, the Rabbeinu Shalom felt, well, to inoculate man, to have it slowly, he elaborates, said, lasad lavai, there would be no karbanis. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're saying, ah, the Rambam, he's an outlier. Okay, so I'll bring you more rayas. Yefastayer, taking a woman during war, and according to many Rishonim, forcing yourself on her. What does the Torah say? Loidibra Torah ela keneged yetzahara. She wasn't Jewish. Loisishatin bam, zayna, whatever the Yisurah may be. Loidibra Torah ela keneged yetzahara. When somebody's at war, sometimes they do bad things, but that's the reality of war. Loidibra Torah. Here's another one. The concept of goyel hadam. Somebody kills somebody by accident. Imagine somebody's in a car accident, Rachman Olatzvan, and they kill somebody. They smash into the car in front of them. The person's head snaps back. Goyel hadam. The family could run after the person and kill him. And what did Rishonim say? It's certainly not a lechatchila. Many rais, Gemara, Rishonim, everybody agrees. Elamai. It's again sort of leidibra tayra ela keneged yetzara. People get really hot-blooded. So we made a way. He says, you know, if you catch him before he runs, tarei miklat. But it's certainly not the right thing to do. But it's accommodating of the weaknesses of man. Here's another one, and I can keep going. Soim tasim alecha melech, kechol hagoyim. No, people look around, they see all the nations around us. They have a melech, and we should be a kapsayasimo. We shouldn't. Salamite, Rabbeinu Shalom says, soim tasim alecha melech. He certainly didn't want it accommodating to man. So what do we see from the Rambam and the Chinuch? It's chas v'shalom, not that kavayachal is prejudiced against the handicapped. On the contrary, like the Maamar of Baruch writes, Adarabba, mitzvah mena mufchar. What does it say at Kav Yachal? HaKadosh Baruch Hu chafetz l'shtamish b'kelim shfurim, Rabbani Shalom likes kerem shfurim, lev nishbar v'nidcha. Like the Kotzke said, there's nothing as straight as a crooked ladder, and there's nothing as whole as a broken heart. But he says, so it's not the inadequate, it's not the prejudice of Kav Yachal, rather, it's the inadequacy of man. Man likes shiny, beautiful things. Even in America, like I said, so handicapped, no president, no royalty, no senators, etc., etc., right? The Rabbeinu Shalom recognizes man's deficiency, and therefore, he said, a Baal Mum cannot be an Oivid in the Beis HaMikdash. And that is the true reason why, Mumin, why? Because man is so small. But chas v'shalom, it's like the Maamar Baruch says, Rabbeinu Shalom loves kelim shvurim. I hope this answers what for me and for many people was a kasha, that something that they struggled with. Let's go to the riddle of the week. We're going to say something about Lag BaOmer. What does the pasuk say in last week's parsha? The concept of arla, shalai shanim yielachem arelim lo yoichal. A tree, the first 3 years, you're not allowed to eat the fruit. What does the Gemara say? Gemara says that Reb Shimon bar Yochai and Reb Elezer ben Oides, the Gemara in Shabbos Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, they went and the Romans were looking for them, so they went and they hid in a cave. B'pnei gzeiras haroimim. And what does the Gemara say? Shom nivra mayan, the Rabbeinu Shalom created for them a spring. And what? And a charuv eitz l'machale, and a buxa tree. Honestly, it's awful. I don't know if you like it. Buxa to me is just awful. But the problem is, if the tree grew for them, how are they allowed to eat the buxa? The halach is the first 3 years. There's a din of arla on the fruit. They shouldn't have been allowed to eat the fruit. Now, it could be maybe pikuach nefesh is different, but let's avoid that for a minute. So the question is, how were they allowed to eat it because of the din of arla? That is the riddle of the week. And again, the first three people to answer the riddle, we will send headlines three so that you and your children have something to debate by the Shabbos table.
As always, if you'd like to send in a comment, 732-806-8700, and for comments, it's 2. Or you can email us info@headlinesbook.com. We do put up the comments and the letters online where readers or listeners can access them unless you request otherwise.
Let's go to our guests and find out how to make a wedding for $10,000. Let's take the wedding challenge.
Joining us is Rav Chaim Eckstein. He's a resident for many years in Monroe. He's a Talmud of Satmar. He learned in Torah Chesed in London. Since then, he's a financial planner. He runs CE Capital Services Empowerment Funding. He started a project called the $10,000 Wedding, which is written up by many of the magazines. He's gotten hundreds of supporters. Welcome, Rav Chaim.
Shalom Aleichem, Reb Dovid.
Reb Chaim, could you tell our Olam about what your project is?
Sure. So the $10,000 wedding challenge is basically what happened was that I married off my child, Baruch Hashem, last summer. And when my son got engaged, I knew that I'm going to have an opportunity to really do things with Seichel and not just follow the crowd. I knew that based on who my mechutan is and based on who my son is and who the Kale is. So being in the financial planning business, I always see people's finances. And more or less, I can say the clients I'm working with, you know, it ranges between very, very successful people and people who just, you know, make pernosa. And I see that, you know, usually when it comes to times of making simchas, they get in the stage in life where they start making chasinas. A lot of times, their whole financial picture turns upside down, sorry. So I thought to myself, maybe I can have an opportunity here to shake up the status quo a little bit by helping people think for themselves what is the right thing to do and not just follow the crowd, follow the Joneses, as they say. So I thought to myself, if I'm just going to come out and tell people, you know, start thinking, who's going to listen? You know, everybody, okay, every kehila, all the askonim, everybody's talking about it. So I thought to myself, what can I do to really make a change, to really wake up people? And somehow this came to my mind that I'm going to announce that I'm going to make a $10,000 wedding challenge. Now, a lot of people think that we're talking about the night of the chasana. No, we're not. We're talking about from the time of the lechayim up to the time of the last Sheva Bruchas should not cost more than $10,000. Now, I did not announce a plan how I'm going to do it. I just said, I want to introduce the $10,000 wedding challenge. Follow me from now, my son got engaged yesterday, up to until the last Sheva Bruchas, and let's see if I'm going to succeed. I'm not sure I'm going to succeed. Maybe not. Let's do it together. And I made this announcement on WhatsApp. I thought I'm going to have 50, 70 people of my following to come and join me in a WhatsApp group and have this conversation for the next, you know, 8-9 months. So I made an announcement that I'm going to do this. And, of course, with an explanation of all the trouble that I see by people, that Baruch Hashem, Ribon Shalom, gives people nachas and parnusa and a life of abundance. And then you mess everything up with your own two hands when it comes to the time of Simcha, that should be the most enjoyable, joyous time.
Rav Chaim, let me interrupt you for 1 second. So you're a financial planner. You have hundreds of clients, right? What percentage of people, like is this, well, 10% of people struggle with chasanas? Give us an idea of what percentage.
I would say 85 to 90%.
Wow.
Now it's okay, a different continue. Level of struggle. It's a different level of struggle for different people. So I made this announcement, and it went on WhatsApp, and I was shocked. I really, literally didn't know what to do with myself. After 6 hours, I had about 5,000 followers. It went viral on WhatsApp, and it filled up one group, and it filled up another group. I think they have like a maximum of 257 people in a group. I saw myself managing 12 groups, full groups on WhatsApp, plus a Telegram channel with another like 1,500, 2,000 people that came on board and wanted to follow the challenge. And I started getting messages like crazy, people telling me, what is your plan? What are you going to do? And I told them, I don't know. We'll see. You know, welcome aboard. Let's do it together. Let's try to figure it out. I don't know. I don't have an exact plan yet. And then I had people saying, no, it cannot be done. To which I answered, thank you very much. I mean, I heard that for the last 30, 40 years already. So now you're the next one to tell me that. Let's hope it can be done. Let's see what we can do.
So, Rav Chaim, how did you give us just a 30 second? How did you do it? I mean, most people spend $10,000 on the vart.
Exactly. So I let me tell you, I terribly, terribly flopped. I didn't make it for $10,000. It cost me $15,000.
Okay, but how did you do it? Walk us through it quickly.
So there was an Excel sheet available that people got updates on every expense that I had. And it was in the AMI from time to time. And also when it finished, it was in the AMI. And all the WhatsApp groups got the updated Excel sheet that I can share with you, all the expenses I had.
Give us broad strokes. What did you do different? Give us just a quick snapshot.
So I have to tell you that I went on the extreme, mamash on the extreme. And the reason I went on the extreme is because I knew that's the only way I'm going to attract the attention of people. And I'm not suggesting anybody to follow my extreme. I don't have any tikkunas. It's not like my package or something. I just shared exactly what I did. The vart did not cost me anything, although usually it's by the mechutin side anyway, but it didn't cost for the mechutin anything either. He just took out some cake that he had prepared with some liquor, and that was the vart. We didn't invite anybody. We did not make it annoy him. That saved us a few thousand dollars. The caller is from Canada, and she wanted to meet the family in New York. So instead of making a big party that should cost a few thousand dollars inviting the family, we had our family call her, invite her to come for a lunch. They all went together to lunch in a restaurant. Everybody ordered whatever they wanted to. But you have to understand, it's easier to do it in the situation I was, because we all felt a tremendous chus that we're helping thousands and thousands of Jewish people. And I know millions of dollars were saved from a lot of Jews, Baruch Hashem, because of this undertaking. Where else should I go? Okay, so in the middle of the whole engagement, COVID hit us, which from one side you can say that it helped in the course, but from the other side it doesn't have to be this way. So we had more expenses because of certain travel that was required for certain people that would not have had expense this way, and we covered it. And from the other side, we had expenses that we didn't have. So I will also mention that you can do today chasenas with certain tikkunas from certain kehillas in Barak Park or in Monroe, where the whole chasena night doesn't have to cost you more than $4,000 or $5,000. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
This is fantastic. But Rav Chaim, let me ask you a question. People have fancy cars. They have fancy kitchens, right? You open up an Ami magazine, see there's 10 ads for cabinets and silver and crystal, v'chulu. Why did you choose the wedding as where to sort of draw a line in the sand?
Excellent question. I'll tell you why. Because from my experience, I don't see people go broke because of a nice car. I don't see people go broke because of a nice kitchen. I don't see any tea parties, any fundraising. Oh, this guy needs a new car. We need to run fundraise for him. You have the money, you do it. You don't have the money, you don't do it. Of course, some people do it even if they don't have the money. Listen, I cannot give seichel to people. But all of a sudden, when it comes to chasenas, it's something that everybody has the situation. Usually a family with kids, they're going to be presented with a situation. They make it chasenas, and people think they have to do certain things that the society imposes on them, they have to do like everybody else, and people go broke because of it.
And you're speaking as somebody who actually sees the, you said, you manage their money and you see how it affects them. Now, here's something. What about all the Yidden who make parnassa from this? This is what I hear. The florists, the musicians, the caterers, the suit, you know, they sell bekishes or suits and shtimels. What about them? Aren't you impacting them?
A lot of people ask me that question, and I tell you what. I'm not suggesting that multimillionaires should not spend a lot of money on chassanus. All I'm saying is, look at your budget, see what you can afford, see what you cannot afford. But you understand that you cannot expect somebody that doesn't have parnusa or has minimum parnusa to go and support all the florists and all the musicians and all the other professionals in their field. And if you really want to support them, take out your credit card, start going on 13th Avenue, go from store to store and tell them, you know, swipe my card for a few $100. I want to give you a parnusa. I mean, what do you want from me? Why do I have to become a nebuch and embarrass myself in front of everybody and do something that I don't even want to do because somebody else needs parnusa?
I think that's a wonderful answer. And you know, today is the night of Yehuda's Yahrzeit, and he actually writes in the Takanas of Prague, he signed it, that if somebody's a big Baal Tzedakah and he has a lot of money, he said, such a person could make, even, he says, you know, Tarnagoylos Mufutamin. But on the other hand, he says, somebody who's not a big Baal Tzedakah, he should make a minimum. So you definitely have predecessors, you know, from Gedolei Olam in this plan. Now, let me ask you a question. This is a sensitive question, but one issue, Chassan and Kala, I mean, how do they feel, you know, when all their friends are having, you know, 5-piece bands, some people 10-piece bands, I've heard about people who have 15-piece bands, and they're the ones who have, you know, a $5,000 wedding, you know, which probably just has a drummer, I imagine, if it has that. Like, what about the Chassan and Kala's feelings?
First of all, you should go check it out. It's pretty nice weddings. They have a one-man band, and it's usually very Labor Day. If it's a Labor Day gemishpucha, it's going to be Labor Day. So don't think it's going to be Labor Day. But let me just tell you in general. A lot of people ask me that question, and I think Ami in the article also asked me that question, and I highly encourage people to read it. So I think there is a fundamental challenge that we have to overcome. People, all of us, I think the number one reason that people suffer so much from all these expensive weddings is just because of the lack of communication. You have two mechitunim sitting down. None of them are gevirim. Both are, you know, just bala parnusa. And they don't even talk about it. I mean, yeah, we have to do what everybody else is doing. I have spoken to many, many bukhirim. Some yeshivas called me to speak to the bukhirim, and I had an open conversation with them, and everybody agreed with me that if his father is going to come to him and explain him his financial situation, explain him what life really is about. It's not about all the fancy flowers at the wedding. You go home after the wedding night. That's when life starts. And then you have an intelligent conversation with any normal, intelligent boy or girl. I'm not talking about exceptions. They would all agree, Tati, I don't want you to get a heart attack because of my chasana. Tati, I would love to have a push at the chasana, and you should be able to continue your life and not have to cover choivas for the next 20 years because of my chasana. Everybody would agree to that. I'm talking.
Rav Chaim, I want to ask you, it's a little bit of left field question, but I have a friend in Eretz Yisrael. I learned with him in yeshiva, and he wanted a very special son-in-law. He told me the only way to get it was to buy the guy, the chassid and kala, like a really, you know, an apartment in a good neighborhood, etc. Then he called me up. He said he's desperate for money. He's mamish having a heart attack. He's a young man. He's a rebbe in a kohl. He said, I'm having a heart attack. I'm shaking. I can't sleep. Would you help me out? And it bothered me. I said, how could you say your son-in-law is special? We know that the beginning of the Torah is v'haspul erech kamoicha. What does the Gemara say? Zu ikra shal Torah, shal pirusha zigmar. Isn't it a seer when you say your son-in-law is the most special balmaila and he's giving his in-laws a heart attack to buy the dira? You think that's a seer in any way?
I think you said it very well. I mean, although it's very hard to speak about a specific situation, but there are very, very good chances that your friend didn't even speak to his son-in-law about the situation, or he didn't send anybody to speak to him. And if he would have, maybe the situation would have been different.
Okay, you said communication. Now, let me ask you another question.
And I'll tell you one other thing about communication, that a lot of people, it's hard for them to speak. So that's why I suggest that if there's any askunam, I make your jobs easier. Instead of running around town raising money, run around town speaking to mechitunam, and make be the mediator between two mechitunim to make sure they do sensible things.
And additionally, I think that if it's seen as a challenge, $10,000 challenge, so adarava, it has a sense of pride. Well, we met the challenge. We were able to do it as opposed to. But here's a question. You know, when you have gevirim, or not gevirim, who are community leaders making very fancy weddings, so let's say in Monroe, it was in the papers, the Rebbe made a 10,000-person wedding. Do you feel it's incumbent upon communal leaders, both Rabbanim, Rosh Hashivas, Rebbes, as well as people who are balabatim in the community, do you think that they are making a bad example when they have these huge weddings of 1,000 or 10,000 people, but at the same time, you know, those in the community that are less prominent, the less Bali Parnassa, are supposed to do a 10,000 person? Do you think there's any type of a bad example in that?
Yes and no. I'll tell you what I mean. If you try to be an example to others, you should act in a way that you want others to learn from you. But that doesn't mean that every gevir has to do something cheap because some other people should learn from him. But what I would say is that instead of spending so much money and marketing all the tikkunas and all the things, which is, you know, I think it's a very good thing because we don't have any better way, but spend at least that money in marketing that people should have size or think for themselves. And I think that's the number one thing, because we, in the Haredish Jewish circles, a lot of people are brainwashed that everybody has to be the same. And if somebody cannot spend what the other can spend, then he's a nebuch. And that's the problem. So if you want to be an example, then go for cheap and give a lot of money for tzedukah. And if you want to spend marketing money to save people from expensive chasanas, spend the marketing on opening the people's minds. Give them chokhmah a little bit.
Chaim, thank you very much. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful project. Rabbeinu Shalom should give you the koyach and success in it and take away agbas nefesh from so many people.
Oh man. Thank you for what you do, and should have a lot of atzlocha.
Amen. Kaltov.
Kaltov.
That's Rav Chaim Eckstein, the founder of the $10,000 project. Just a beautiful project that will take away really the stress of so many families. Let's move on to our next guest.
Joining us from New York is Rabbi Yosef Vigler. He's the Rav of Mayan Yisrael. He's a Talmud of Rabbi Baruch Mordechai Yizrachi, Kfar Chabad. Welcome, Rabbi Vigler.
Yes, Akoyah. Thank you. I'm David. Good to be here.
So many people during COVID had small, minimal symptoms. And there was a hargusha by some people that there's something beautiful about it, and maybe some of this would last after COVID. Do you see any erosion of this, or it's just back to normal?
I think, you know, if you look at the on surface level, it looks like it's pretty much back to normal. But if you look a little bit under the surface, there are something has changed. I just need to pinpoint exactly what it is.
Okay. So let me ask you, you have a wealthy misbal. He's a Baal Tzedakah, and he wants to make a bar mitzvah for $100,000, whatever it may be. And he comes to you for advice. What would you tell him?
You know, I think it really depends on the person. Some people, if a guy is a wealthy, wealthy guy, and he doesn't flinch by making a bar mitzvah, it doesn't mean anything to him. It doesn't, nothing happens there. That's one thing. The problem is that you have a lot of balabatim who really are suffering and struggling, and they look at another balabos who they don't know to be necessarily so wealthy, and the guy makes a beautiful giant simcha, and then this guy feels the need to do that. And that's where the problem comes in. That guy has to make a simcha. You know, a simcha is not a simcha when you're worried about the money and you're desperate for it. A simcha is a simcha when you can actually celebrate, so then you're celebrating it based on where you're holding in your level, in your social degree.
And therefore, what would you, so let's go back to this wealthy fellow. What would you tell him?
You know, here's a little story I want to share with you. My wife's grandfather, his name was Hirsch Melech Spalter. So I actually just recently saw a clip by her uncle, who's a Rosh Hashiva in Morristown. His name is Rabbi Shalom Spalter. He said that in the 1960s, he turned bar mitzvah, and his father was at that time doing very well. And the question came about, he wanted to make a bar mitzvah. So he wanted to make a beautiful simcha and make an expensive simcha because he was able to. It was also 20 years after the Holocaust. There hadn't been so many simchas, so he wanted to do something beautiful. So he sends in to the Lubavitcher Rebbe to ask him what he should do. And the answer came back that if you're asking me, a simcha should be beautiful, beruchnias, and less begashnias, even if you have the money to do so. He says what they did was he did an extra mimer, an extra stickle player. He set in. He came in to the Rebbe afterwards, and he was extremely excited by what happened over there. Now, that's really what happened, you know, in such an instance. I think that is really the message over here, how we want to approach this. A simcha needs to be beautiful, beruchius. The gashmius is a whole different world, but the gashmius needs to temper the ruchius. And the main thing is the simcha, the spiritual simcha.
Let me share with you a story. My shkar zecharei levracha was the son of Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. Mm-hmm. And before his chasana, he went into the rayatz to get a bracha before his wedding. And he went in, and they said he's not taking anybody. So he said, tell him that the son of Reb Shraga Feivel Mendelovich is here. So he had a lot of hakaras atayv to him because he sent him his first bachrim. So he said, tell him to come in. So he came in. And he was already very sick there, and it was hard to understand him. But he said, he came in, and he gave him Shalom Aleichem. He said, Chassan, sit down. And he told his gabbai, bring me my spadik. And he brought him the spadik, and he said, he stood up, and he buttoned his kapata, and he said, I want to give you a drasha geshank. I want to give you a present for your chasana. And he said a maima, lama yoruda neshama la'olam hazeh. He said for 40 minutes he said a maima, and he said dasai drashi geshank mazel tov. That was the wedding gift he gave my shver.
That's absolutely beautiful. Wow. You know, I just want to share with you about six months ago, so when corona was at its peak, I made a chasana for my daughter Baruch Hashem, and mom, it's 3 weeks before the wedding. We still didn't know. That's when we decided which hall we would do it. So, and it was much more tempered, you know, very difficult to get the people and the everything, all the details that were there. So instead, what I ended up doing was I just spent time with my daughter, and we were just talking about shalom bayis, how to run a home, and all the efforts were spent on the spiritual side. It was just magnificent. We were just connecting in a father and daughter way. And I spoke about it in shul. I was saying, look, if you're making a giant wedding, you spend the time figuring out which guests are coming and where each guest is going to sit, and then what style band and how many members in the band and all those details, that's going to cost something, and it's going to come at an expense of the time you can spend with your child and the spiritual side. I think the ability to spend that spiritual side with my daughter was phenomenal. It was the best type of wedding you could ever imagine. It was just beautiful and magnificent. And the fact is, it took with the gufa is chul shad mishma. So, you know, the stronger the gashmius is, the weaker the ruchnius. It's an inverse proportion.
So here's my question. You have a balabas who feels social pressure, and he can't afford a fancy wedding, and he comes to you. He says, look, I would like a nice wedding. Is it okay for me to borrow money to make a bigger wedding? What would you tell him?
It's a tough one. You know, we once had a case. There was someone who, many years ago, there was someone who made a wedding, and we had to actually collect money for this wedding, and went to the wedding and saw that the wedding was a lot fancier than anyone could imagine, more fancy than most people would be doing. And he came along and he said, you know, that one of the family members by him felt that it was important to make such a wedding, and so they wanted to sponsor that extra bit. So they went and raised money for that extra bit. And it was just a very difficult thing to accept. Now, you know, here you are, you raised money for the guy. So why couldn't that other family member pay that extra money? But he needed it for that, for the prestige. And that's where the issue comes in. I think that, first of all, you know, mitzvah the giver. So what does it say? Tzedakah is making sure that the person has what they need, and whatever they feel they need, even if it's not an emes feeling, and kol yisrael b'nei melachim, everyone's worthy and need to get what they need to get. So I think in that sense, it's you gave the tzedakah, but it's the people that I think this needs to begin from the gvirim, the wealthy people who can make that decision that I'm going to make this a more normal wedding and make it more spiritual beauty, and that trickles down to everybody else. It's a culture that needs to be changed over here. I don't know if one person can decide that they're going to change it. Kehila can change it, but this is something that needs to be done more by the upper echelons of society who have the power to do so and to make a real change.
So you think a wealthier person has an achrayus to tone down his simcha because of the effect, the trickle down theory that it has on the less affluent?
Yes, you know, listen, I'm not here to tell anyone what to do. I don't think that's where we're holding in our time, unless you have that kind of kehila. But it would definitely be phenomenal if that happened. definitely be a major thing. I mean, look at the Corona weddings. They were magnificent. You go to a wedding today, you don't even know who the people are rushing from one wedding to another. So they're doing, I've got this simcha, I've got to go to a bar mitzvah, I've got to go to a l'chaim, I've got to, you know, a whole bunch, a whole host of things, and I'm dancing at four weddings. And the more you're doing, the more chashuv it is. That guy spent money to make his wedding. You're coming in and just leaving and going. How many people go to a wedding and don't even know who the chassan and kala are? You make a wedding and you make it with people who care about you and you care about them, and it becomes a more emissa, authentic simcha. You know, and Shalom Bayis has nothing to do with how big the wedding was. Shalom Bayis has everything to do with how much ruchnis there is in the wedding, not the gashmis.
I want to read to you. This is Minhage Teiman, Amram ben Yechia. He says, Afilu Ashir v'yadei maseges. These were the Takanas Teiman. Afilu Ashir v'yadei maseges. You shouldn't make it fancy. Shaloi levayesh es mi she'en lo. This was written like 150 years ago. I don't think anything's changed.
I'm reminded of Rabban Gamliel, who, and that's a different kind of simcha in Hilchos Machos, but he chose to have tachrichim that were white in order to change the culture.
Yeah.
And he really did it.
Now, it's interesting how different menhagim, you know, in the Neid de Behuda, in the Moshe's Hador, the Takanis from Prague, he writes that somebody who gives Sheish Meyos Kesef Lushana, which was a lot of money to tzedakah, and somebody who was a big philanthropist, Yecholim Lesnaig Besudas Nesuin B'yad Rechava B'li Mitzarim. So it's interesting. Here's two different opinions. Takanas Teiman, she's Shaloi Levayi, she's Mishenlai. And then Rabbi Yehuda says, if somebody's a big philanthropist, he could do B'li Mitzarim. So it seems this debate goes back hundreds of years.
Also, maybe a different culture over there.
Yeah. Let me ask you another question. Do you think we can enforce takanas today? Like, is it realistic for a community to make takanas and for the rabbanim to come out and say, listen, I'm not going to be Masada Kedushin if you do X, Y, or Z? Is that realistic, or it's just in fantasy land?
I mean, depends which kahila. A big Hasidic kahila can clearly do that. Even a small shul, which has 100 or 200 mispalalim, just a small kehila, is definitely able to do that within the kehila. I think it has a ripple effect, but it's going to stem from the gevirim being on board with it. It's not like we have the power to declare anything from above. So it's more like an education thing.
So why don't rabbanim speak about it more?
I think it's really something that has to come from by the people, for the people. If you look at the Corona weddings, people were marveling at those weddings you saw with the clips going around of Akala in her house in a beautiful setting. And then you notice, the more you notice how beautiful the ruchnias is, the more it expresses the stunning beauty of a spiritual wedding. And I think that's what we need to be addressing. I think Rabbanim are talking about it more. I think it's not so much Rabbanim need to talk about it. It's more, it's like the people. It's not going to happen unless the people are on board.
As a Rav, have you seen the stress and damage it does to people who can't afford it?
There is no doubt about that. There's no question of a doubt. You know, I have to, we have an organization for children from single-parent homes, most of them from divorced homes. That's called My Extended Family, and we have 360 kids in Flatbush, Muncie, Crown Heights, and in five towns right now, soon opening in more locations. And that's all, it's primarily divorced kids, and it comes from a certain place. And I think there's no question that's not the stress of the wedding itself. This is the stress that happens later on. It's happening somewhere. I think we need to really address the issue. It happens from a lifestyle that people live in that needs to be shifted and changed. When someone is stressed about a chasana and the gashmias is addressed too much, it's going to have a ripple effect. There's no question of a doubt about that. It's going to affect Shalom Bayis.
Is there anything else you would add to this?
You know, I think that's basically, that's the basic nekuda. I think it's all about an emissary Yiddishkeit, a real pnimius dikah. I want to mention about Sheva Brachos, right? Today we have, it's like people have a question, we have a Sheva Brachos. So did you make a Sheva Brachos that night? And which night don't you have Sheva Brachos yet? Almost as if there's a mitzvah to have Sheva Brachos every night. And it's an unnecessary stress that comes from an affluent society. Sometimes we need to just go back to the basics, the ruchnis. And I think it really, when we see how much happier it makes you begashmias, that's when things change. Corona is an opportunity. This is really an opportunity now in Kalisto to make some change.
I want to share with you that Chassam Sofer, in Shaul Tshuva Chassam Sofer, Ebenezer Siman Kuf Chav Beis, quotes the Bach and the Bach was against making Sheva Brachas after the second day. And the Chacham Sofer says, because you say Shasimcha B'moinei, and he brings from the Beis Meir, he says, Hashta B'avonei Seinu Arabim Orva Kol Simcha. He says, we lost because of Avonei Seinu Arabim, Im Kein B'yimei Keich Le Baruchu Rak Yuma Kama. Damrinam B'moyed Katan Ika Simcha Chad Yuma. And he says, the Chacham Sofer, the Bach, the Beis Meir, they did not believe in making after the first day Sheva Brachas. And you know, it's interesting. I don't think there's any gadol in the last 200, well, the Chacham Sofer was niftar, I believe, in Tafkuf Tzadik Tes. So anybody in the last 200 years who had as many grandchildren alive today as the Chacham Sofer, and I wonder if any of his grandchildren take this Chuvah Chacham Sofer at the heart, where he says, after the first day, don't make Sheva Brachas because there's no real Shasimcha B'mayde B'zvad Hazeh. But just like, you know, like you say, people who every night have to have a fancy Sheva Brachas, who Malayf, the Mekump, the Me'es, you have already Kadmoinim who are opposed to it. I mean, the Bach is like from the earliest of the Achroinim, right?
Right, of course, it's a very different setting today. We live in a Gashmiistic, affluent society. I don't think they knew at those times how much people have today and how much they is available. So it's more difficult today. There's no question that it's more of a challenge today. You can't really blame people. I think it's a matter of us working from inside. When people see how, it's not about telling people about the negative. It's about stressing how beautiful it is when you have a Ruch Nisik, a wedding. People who want to be there, who are interested in being there, Chassan and Kala want to be there, the Sheva Brachas, that, it makes it a beautiful event. And that spirituality has an effect in life.
Yeah. No, I'm not, Chas V'Shalom, criticizing somebody who wants to, you know, have your Dalet Sudas by Sheva Brachas, which, you know, it's brought from also from Kadmainim. I'm just saying that people who feel guilty that they can't make it one night or they're not making fancy enough, etc., they should know that the Bach, the Chacham Sofer, the Beis Meir, there's a bunch more who hold that really Mekar Adin, like the Gemara and Moed Katan, we should just have Sheva Brachas for one day. Yes, lohem al mi lismach.
Yeah, a little more than only lismach. It's a modern thing.
Well, thank you very much for your time. This is really very, you know, wise and appreciated. Very relevant. Okay?
Thank you so much. Shaflacha and Nimrit Hashem. The name is hoping that we should be zoicha to see endless of success in everything we do.
Amen. Thank you, Kalt of Rabbi Vigla.
Kalt of.
Bye-bye. Joining us is the famous singer Shlomi Dax. He has 25 years in the music industry. He's put out many CDs, sings by weddings, etc., concerts, Talmud of Torah Vadas, and Shar Torah. He's a Ben Torah too. Welcome, Shlomi.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
Shlomi, are you seeing post-COVID any difference in the weddings from pre-COVID? Like, people are happier with smaller weddings. There's like a sense that we don't need to have our cousins' baba by every wedding. Are you seeing any of that?
It's a little bit early probably to really say clearly what will change or what has changed, but I definitely got a sense from people that smaller, it was nicer. The dance floor was, there was more space on the dance floor and it was easier to manage, and of course, kind of, you know, budget-wise, it saved money. But it's hard to say. I do see it coming back to normal very, very shortly. I thought it would never really go back, but slowly I'm seeing that weddings will be back to almost full swing. I do have a sad feeling that's going to happen.
What drives people to invite individuals who they mamish never talk to? They have nothing to do with them. They're just distant cousins, or they're in the same shul. Like, what drives it?
I don't know. It's a very good question. COVID really magnified that question more, where even musicians said to me many times, like, why you guys feel restricted? Every person you nod your head to in the street you invite, how do you have 500 friends? And they're just blown away. You know, they're not some or non-Jewish musicians. They just can't understand it. But on the other hand, like my Rav, Rabbi Moshe Tevyelit, who came from Minneapolis before he became Rav of Agudath Avenue in Flatbush, he said, but can you imagine a wedding with 10 people or 15 people? Who would know that that ended up becoming a reality to many people? But it's not the same. It's beautiful when there's a lot of people, but it might just be a little excessive. I agree with that. But the more people there, just the nicer the Rebbe has a smell at almost. You just enjoy the wedding when there's more people. But it is a good question, and I don't know. I don't have the answer.
Okay. Now you put together bands as well, right? Now,
correct.
What do you do when somebody approaches you and there's, you know, a 15-piece band. And he says, you know, it's just ostentatious. It's like, you know, music in general is something that the Shulchan Aruch barely tolerates. Like, you know, 15-piece bands, do you ever feel guilty about it? Or what would you respond to somebody like that?
So I would respond very nicely and say, basically, you know, it's like Rav Tam. Rav Tam once came over to us at a wedding. Rav Tam Zatzal, my Rebbe, and Shirat Harbadas, came over to us. He once started to approach the band, and we got nervous, and maybe it was too loud, and what is he coming over? And he so nicely, in his gentle way, said to us, having zin that you're being misameach chas in the kala, and you get a mitzvah also, even if you're making a panasa. And he said how he was makana his pharmacist, how a pharmacist is making a living, and yet he's doing chesed all day. So what I would tell this person is, we're making a living, and these people who are making these over-the-top weddings are giving a lot of tzedakah, and at least vendors, the florists, the photographers, the bands, are all Yiddish people. Nobody is hiring a non-Jewish band or a non-Jewish florist or a non-Jewish caterer, obviously. So, fucking, is he okay? These people are giving so much tzedakah, and if he wants to make a nice wedding, you know, it's something that you might not understand. But there are needs. The Gemara talks about how you have to sometimes sustain a poor person to the level that he was if he loses all his money, because it's a certain lifestyle. You might not understand it, but everybody's making panasa from this. I'm too close to the tree to see the forest, obviously, with this question. I'm the gavadavar. But I think it's beautiful, and as long as you don't go too crazy and you're giving it to duck and you're doing the right thing, I think it's something that shouldn't bother these people.
Yeah, I'll just quote, and I did it with the Rav before, the Noida Behudin, the Moifes Hadar, talks about how, it's on page Lamed Zayin in the Moifes Hadar, he talks about somebody who has not given much tzedakah that year, he says, shouldn't even serve wine by the wedding. Ein lo losses yayin lefnei abesubim. But he says, somebody who gave 400, must be some amount in Prague, lamaila. He says, such a person, yachil es halet, berachava, betarnegoylem, mefutamim, can have stuffed chickens and stuffed geese, the yayinos, mevusamim, kechalav asnafshe. He says, if you were responsible to the community, you could have his exact lashon is, yachilim lesnagim, besudas nesun, biyad rechava, beli mitzarim. So it's interesting. He felt that. He felt that it was contingent on, like, really, what have you done for the community? It's a little bit of a different look than what you're saying. You're saying he's giving parnasa to many people, and he just said, if you were somebody who really supported the community, Biyad Rechava, then you should have a wedding, Biyad Rechava. But if, on the other hand, you were a person who, when, you know, you didn't give Biyad Rechava, when it comes to making your wedding, and you want to do it Biyad Rechava, then it'd be who the opposite of it. He said, you can't even have wine by the wedding. I think that's an interesting spin, isn't it?
Wow, very powerful, very interesting spin.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree with you, and so many people don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I could tell you that when I'm doing prep and I'm dealing with these people, I know that they're making other weddings with the Aliyahs in there to swirl a lot of them. A lot of them are helping so many people who can't afford to make weddings while they're making it. They feel it's a schus for their own child's wedding. So, yeah, it's very telling. Yeah, it's very true what you're saying. Very interesting.
Let me ask you a sensitive question. Is there anything you turn down? Like, it's just over the top, I won't do it, or do you say, look, Parnassa's Parnassa?
No, I can't turn down an over-the-top wedding, but I will turn down mixed dancing type of weddings or weddings that go halachically, that against a tradition, against what I believe, where I cannot do certain things, that I will turn down. But there's endless other stuff regarding people making weddings. If a guy is giving $1 million to Tamir and Eretz Yisrael, and then he makes a crazy Hilton wedding, I'm not turning it down.
No, but what you're saying, but mixed dancing you would turn down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or they want Goyish music. These type of things are already not what I provide. I will not do that.
So, Shlomi, if you heard they were trying to make a takana of only one-piece bands based upon the fact that so many people go into debt, that the need to outdo the Joneses is so prevalent when it comes to weddings, creates so much stress. People, it's very disruptive, so they came out with a takana, only one-man bands. What would your reaction be?
My reaction would be very simple. First of all, I want to also mention that several years ago, way before Corona, I sat in at a meeting with many vendors, florists, photographers, caterers, and many Rabbanim were there and Askanim were there to discuss limiting the amount of bands, of band pieces, musicians, and having weddings to a limited amount of people, etc. And the main point that we kept on saying was, not only are you now going to take away so many of our panasa, so many of us, but think about what you're trying to accomplish. Because an adult needs to, doesn't understand that he's spending beyond his means, and he needs to keep up with his neighbor or have a statement to make with money he doesn't have, where do you draw the line? These are adults. These people should be, again, they should be happy for someone else. And instead we're feeding into it and making the people who have and want to make a beautiful chasana and are doing a lot of very good things with their money and with their panasa. And instead, let's where does it draw? Maybe people in their houses shouldn't be making gorgeous $50,000 kitchens. Maybe where does it end? Maybe their cars. The cars are going to Japanese people, and the money is going for all those to Goyim, and the kitchens might be going to Goyim. But yet here, panasa is being made to enhance a chasana, to make a chasana beautiful, and yet that's the point you want to pick on and tell adults how to make their wedding when they should, on their own, know, this is beyond my means, this is what I can afford, this is what I can't afford. And to us, it really didn't make sense. And I really don't understand it. I have to be honest with you.
So, Shlomi, I don't have a dog in this race, but let me tell you how somebody could possibly respond. They could say, listen, imagine a guy sells cigarettes, and we said, listen, we want to make a takana. Stores can't have cigarettes. And somebody came and he says, do you know how much parnassa you're taking away? Do you know how many grocery stores, how many supermarkets, how many coffee shops they sell cigarettes? Why would you take away their parnassa? And the answer is, the community's poison, you have to look past parnassa. You say, listen, Mr. Grocery Store, to sell more donuts and afkamina. Rabbeinu Shalom gives parnassa, but we want to keep cigarettes or marijuana, whatever it may be, out of our society, not disrespecting the fact that it could harm people's parnassa. That would be point A. And point B about your point about kitchens, which is well taken, is I would say that chasanas are sort of more public than what people have in their homes. Like, I know many people, I've never been in their houses, but a chasana is sort of, with 400 or 500 people there, so it's meant to, be very out there, very in your face, as opposed to what's going on inside the privates of your home. Like, how would you respond to those two points?
So both points are very are well taken. I'll start with the second point about privacy of someone's home. I agree with you that this is more of a public, this is showing a lot of people what is happening, and it could cause resentment or people like a bacher going back to his father and saying, hey, I want that same big band at my wedding. I get that. But the point is that you compared it to cigarettes, which is a little bit extreme, because I feel that cigarettes, if it's determined that it literally is a point of someone could die from it, if someone in their own house is going over and making a kitchen that they can't afford either, they're also hurting themselves and hurting their wives. Their shalom bias could be happening because there's things internally that we don't know how they're spending and what they're spending. So it could trickle into the finances of the person even beyond the inside of their home. And to cool it exactly in the same case of cigarettes, I guess you're saying that down the line it could kill someone, or it could very hurt their health, and it could lead to very serious problems.
No, that wasn't really so much my point. My point is that we can't take a position on something that we think isn't correct based upon parnassa. Well, we couldn't stop drug dealers. We couldn't stop prostitutes. We have to do what's right, not because of parnassa. People will get a different parnassa, but we can't allow, weed to be sold because all the weed sellers will go out and think. In other words, it's a question of communities have to do what's right, not worry about
parnassa. So the question
parnassa.
Is this the point to pick on? Let's pick on chasanas, the most beautiful time a person can express their simcha. It's the most joyous occasion, marrying off a child. And picking that as opposed to perhaps going away for Pesach, and this doesn't end. But to pick on a chasana, where the music makes a wedding, or the food, people want to enjoy a night with their friends, and the chasanas are beautiful. And I have to say myself that the chasanas I went to during Corona, I finally understood that when it had much less people, it wasn't the same. It just wasn't as geschmack. It just wasn't the same. So the question is, where do you draw the line? Is it vacations? Is it, you know, what becomes the thing where we want to save Klal Yisrael, and at the same time, you're also causing hundreds of people to have now not have parnassa? This is what we've been doing. I can't, in the middle of my life, suddenly become an accountant. So I don't know. I of course, we don't have a straight answer. I just feel it's interesting that adults are being told this is the limit you could do, because down the block there's somebody who doesn't have that maturity, that understanding that he can't go beyond his means. This is what I can afford, and I cannot do more than that. And I want to do the same wedding that my neighbor did. It's just something that I can't grapple with, and it's hard to. And we're not talking about children where we're building a fence that they shouldn't go into the street, or a mica. We don't want someone to fall off a roof. We're talking about adults who know what they're earning as a living. And yet we're so busy, and it's very sad. They should be happy for their neighbor, and then we would have a much healthier Klal Yisrael.
I mean, I think these are valid points. I would just note that anybody who has kids today, and this is a sidebar, sees that I think growing up today is harder than it really was in my time, because, you know, kids are so aware through Instagram and social media of who has what, and who's better looking, and who's the skinniest, and who's they airbrush the lies. We live in a society that has so much social pressure. And I guess this was one of the higher, more visible, you know, more salient points of social pressure. But I do agree with you. It's like, so should we stop somebody from losing weight because all his chubby neighbors will be jealous? I mean, at a certain point, like, you know, we have to assume that you're an adult. I certainly agree with that point.
No, and absolutely. And I think what you were really hitting on the point that we discussed earlier was that today's generation, I get the feeling that parents are afraid, perhaps, that's maybe the wrong word, they're afraid to tell their children, this is what I can afford, and this is what I can do. I can't do more because ABC. And because the children are so different to society than we grew up with, I think the kids are putting the pressure perhaps on the parents, and the parents aren't able to be mechanic to their children, or rebbes and yeshiva perhaps. This is what we can afford, this we can't. This is gashmius, this is what is tolerable, and this is what's not. And I think that might be a big part of the problem.
Yeah. Well, Shlomi, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome.
Kol tov, all the best. Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Joining us from New York is Shaul Greenwald. He is the CEO of Riverside Abstract, a big title company. He also has a program called 20minutedaf.com. He's an attorney. He's Talmud of Torah Tamima. He's really Arkaver Trerachshe, both a businessman and a Ben Torah. Welcome, Shaul.
Thank you very much for joining.
So you founded something called the Chasana Initiative. Could you tell us what it is?
So I started thinking about this prior to COVID. I was talking to a very close friend of mine, and I have used it for many, many years, Hillel Trapper, also from Flatbush. And going back about 2 years ago during the summer, we were talking about it, about excess of classness and the amount of requests that we personally get from people who are making classes to help out with various expenses, and how we could get involved and try to come up with some sort of wedding guidelines and suggest that people tone down and lower the standards of the wedding. You know, there are many different things that we thought about at that time as far as focusing on. And we felt that weddings is something that at some point in life, and it's a shame every family is going to make a wedding, and it's something which is a public display, and people want to feel good about what they're doing when they're making a wedding. And the peer pressure is pretty immense. And we just felt that that was a good way to start and speak about at least what we feel is a major expense for any family, and definitely for people that are just what we call the middle class or middle upper class in our community even, and forgetting about Rabbeim and people at the lower tier echelon where they could get away potentially with making a chasana and stay within the means. But there are certain people that feel that they have to stay within, you know, their societal pressures. And we felt that there was a need to change that in some way. So we came up with some suggestions. Actually, at that point, we called it the Sameach to Sameach Wedding Guideline Suggestions.
Before you tell us the suggestions, like what inspired you? What event inspired you? Where did somebody hit a funny bone that you said, ouch, and I've got to change something? What was that?
I just think that as I became more involved with the community, I kept hitting into the same space where people that are in my circle, either friends of mine, you know, people that I know from Yeshiva, people within the business community, within my community, in Flatbush, we kept seeing that we're getting those types of requests around the chassid time. And, you know, not that they were toning down their chassids necessarily, the chassids were staying within a certain guideline or within what, let's call societal pressure demands. And there were people coming around saying, this person needs $10,000, $20,000 or more to make a chasna. I'm saying, I don't understand. Why don't they just make a chasna that costs $10,000, $20,000 less, and no one will have to go and raise money for them? Why do they have to be in that position? And it seems to be unnecessary. It just seems to be something which is not a necessity, but we created this necessity. And there are other communities in the Hasidic world that have, you know, strong communities, and they could say, this is what you're going to do. And our, what's called the Yeshivish, Baalbatish community, you don't really have that type of a situation, and therefore it's very hard to implement something. And we thought that if you start at the top, and at least people that want to get involved and maybe could make a cost of that of a larger size, or, you know, spending more money, and we take on ourselves to decide not to do that, then instead of having a bottom-up approach, to have a top-down approach, and hopefully that will have an effect on people. That was the basic original concept.
So what was the initiative that you launched?
So prior to COVID, we were thinking about doing it a little bit differently, but during once COVID started, we got a call from a couple other people that heard we were thinking about something, and the initiative, called the Simcha Initiative, got started where the request was that instead of focusing on specifics of the chasna, as far as what type of bin and what type of what type of main dish and what other excesses there are, but start with just having a certain maximum number of people, and hopefully by the fact that it's just toned down in that regard, maybe that will have an effect on the dollars spent, and people could do or make chassis in a different fashion as well. And that was done with guidance from Rabbi Reisman. We spoke to Rabbi Reisman at length, and really a lot of the ideas were his, and we were just, you know, behind it and trying to take this to the next level, and hopefully get people to step in and decide to join the initiative.
So what were his ideas?
Really, he wanted to keep it very simple, which was 250 people for the chasna, and then you can have the Simchas Chasna Kala and bite whatever you want. But as far as guidelines itself, you know, talking about avarts and l'chaims and other parts of the chasna, we weren't getting so deeply involved at that point. We weren't trying to make a complete takana chasna. We were just trying to lower the number of people, and hopefully through lowering the number of people, that also affects people that they won't make such a fancy chasna for that number of people. That was the basic idea. Not much more than that. Simchanishiv.com, you can see those guidelines.
So it's 250 people, which is 125 from each side, right?
Correct.
And anything else besides that? Like you said, there are a few other points. What would they be?
The first point was no elaborate torch celebrations. And the wedding meal, meaning not Simchas Chasna Kala, should be to family and close friends of Chasna Kala, with a maximum of 250 invited guests. And then Simchas Chasna Kala, whoever wants to come, that would be fine. That was not an issue. But that was really the only two guidelines that we had that's on the website.
Is it getting much purchase? Like, are you getting rabbanim? Are people calling you say it's a great idea? We want to put it into place. You want to get people to, like, is it gaining traction?
So if you go to the website, there's about 1,300 or so participants who listed their name on a website, and they decided to take on this initiative. Now, we understand, and I think that was your question that we got, that if we take on the initiative, we're going to have machatanim that might not be happy with it. We have other pressures that may come into play. And our idea was, at least at this point, was we're not trying to force anyone into something. We want this to be initiative that people are doing on their own, and understanding that affects many people. But I think that what we saw is that many of the people that signed up, not necessarily were people that had money and they could afford an isopropyl, and they decided to join this initiative. Now, one thing that I heard from someone when we were starting this, and he told me, don't be discouraged, but likely once COVID is over, everything's going to go back to normal. And I think that we see that already, that once COVID is over, you know, people are back to excesses, and I don't know if any lesson was necessarily learned. I hope privately people are learning lessons. I'm not sure how much of that is filtering down or actually making any change in our community. So, you know, I can't say it's a successful initiative. I'm not going to take credit for a successful initiative, but I hope that what it created is that people are thinking before they make a hospital, you know, it's not a big deal to do it a little simpler and start lowering our standards a little bit. But, you know, as I said, I'm not sure how much of a change it's going to actually be.
So a question for you. Do you feel societally that us FRMA are more conscious about what other people think, like more of a community pressure? Because when you go to the Goyim, I mean, a 50-person wedding is considered a large wedding. The concept of having 500 people by a wedding to them is astonishing. So do we live in a greater fishbowl? Is there more community pressure? Like, what's the reason for this?
I'm not a social scientist. I don't know exactly what the pressures are, but I can tell you that one thing was for certain, we live in a community. A lot of the people who are not in the Jewish community live two things. They live by themselves mostly in a certain degree. They have their friends, their close friends, but they're not joining a shul of 200 other families that are like-minded people. And they're also not living within a heterogeneous type of a society where you have wealthy people that could be rubbing shoulders with people that are, you know, are in Tokyo Shabbos by in shul, because we live in communities and we don't live within societal frameworks that are based on status. Whereas in the non-firm community, not Jewish community, you're living in societal in areas which are based on pretty much your social status.
If people live in their circles of social status, why wouldn't they, in their social status, have weddings for 250 or 300 or 400 people?
At the same time, we are also, and at 250 people, I think is it's not such a big number in our community, because when you start with your family and people start with 10 children, just your own family could be, you know, if you're marrying off your last child, you have a small family, you have 6 children. You have already, just between your children, your grandchildren, your brothers, sisters, your wife's brothers and sisters on both sides, you could have 250 people just between your immediate family. So, you know, a lot of times people think that a chassid is 500 people. It's a huge amount. It is a big amount. There's no question. And people are inviting their shul, and now maybe people won't invite the people of the shul for the whole chassid, but, you know, that happens as well. And people get insulted. There are people like that. I'm not sure about you, but I don't get insulted. I'm not invited to a wedding. I'm actually, I won't say the word I'm happy, but I know that I have more time that day, that I don't have to feel that I'm going to be insulting someone by not going to the chassid. So that's I think it just breeds on the fact that I invite someone or I invite the entire shul, then everyone feels that you have to invite the entire shul. And even if you're not in that tier that you could afford it, you just pulled into that same situation.
You know, I'm looking at brides.com. I typed in the average wedding in America, the average being 167 people.
Right.
So you're saying basically that the fact that we have a greater sense of community, of kehillah, you know, it's Adas B'nai Yisrael, Kehillas Yaakov, since we're more, we live together, we help each other, so that creates a bigger chevrai, and that's why we have larger weddings. So basically you're saying it comes from Roimimus, not from Shiflus.
Oh, I don't think that there's anything that's bad about the fact that people are inviting. It's just that it's a shame that people are not strong enough to withstand that pressure and say, well, I can invite my friends and family, or I say family meaning second cousins and maybe even first cousins, and friends that are not necessarily my complete inner circle, but, you know, a little bit removed from that, and invite them to Simchas Chatzavakawa, and you're still doing the same thing. Everyone feels good, and actually people are going to save time. It's about a lot of things. It's not only about money. It's also about how much time is spent of people that are going to weddings and sitting there for 3-4 hours, and I'm by chassid. I know people around the table are saying, when's the customer power coming in? I got to be by the first dance. And dance a little bit till she sees me, and then I got to leave. And I don't understand that, because at the same time, coming for a few minutes, same out of, show that you spent like 20, 30 minutes or more longer in the car to come and show that I appreciate a friendship, a relationship. And I want to wish you well, and I feel your sympathy. And I think that's good enough for them. And most people would be appreciative of that. But so it's not only about money, it's about time and so many other parts of which that of course snowballs into. If you're a young family, you have children at home, and you're leaving once a week for a wedding during June or more to some people, that takes away from the family time and from the children's time, and affects family dynamics as well.
I have one thing I would like to add on to your takanas. If it's somebody who you haven't spoken to in the last 30 days, or you don't speak to once a month, that should be the limit of the wedding.
Okay. There's all types of understanding of what we make a bracha, right? If you don't see someone for 30 days.
You make a shachianu. So it's a raya. In other words,
you're correct.
If you have to make a shachianu when you see the person, you don't have to invite them to the wedding. What do you think of that?
It's a good idea. Definitely a good thought. But if you talk to, and I've spoken to many people, you speak to 10, 20 people, every single person will have another idea of how to do this better. But in the meantime, it doesn't seem like many people are actually going to do anything. And when we speak to other people, they say, it's a great idea, but I can't do it because my chatanin, I can't do it because my wife doesn't want it, or the wife will blame the husband. So there's a lot of pointing of fingers of why this continues. But so far, we're not seeing a major shift in mindset and acceptance of understanding that everyone should live their own lives and not think so much about others on the sense of if they can't afford. And the people that can't afford should sometimes think about others that can't afford and hopefully pay their spending, even though they can do it, in order to help other people do the same.
You know, when by Yetzias Mitzrayim, right after Yetzias Mitzrayim, you have Mitzvahs Matzah. And the Maral says that matzah is going back to who we really are. Chametz is puffed up and represents ego and society and social pressure. And matzah represents the simple person, the authentic person. And the idea being is, don't exchange the slavery that you had in Mitzrayim for the slavery of making other people satisfied, of needing the affirmation of other people and the praise of other people, because that's a different type of slavery. And we go back to matzah, we're saying, I just want to be the authentic me, and I'm not really interested in what society, I don't need the affirmation of society.
It sums up the conversation quite well.
Well, Rav Shol, thank you very much, and I hope your initiative really takes off and you matzliach.
Thank you so much for that.
Kol tov.